Good morning. This is Neil Strauser with the CBS World News Roundup. Substituting this week for Dallas Townsend. Oregon has yet to vote, and the Democrats campaign on there. But President Ford and Ronald Reagan have already left behind that most hotly contested of the six primaries being held tomorrow. The switch in locale reflects a conclusion that it will all come down to the big state of California on June 8th. And while Mr. Ford takes a side trip to Nevada, which also votes on Tuesday, he begins this day telling the Convention of California Peace Officers in Anaheim that he wants America's third century to be a century of security abroad and on the streets at home. More on the Ford strategy from Phil Jones.
The Nevada campaigning will last less than 3 hours. Mr. Ford and his aides think victory in Nevada is unlikely, so little time has been budgeted. The emphasis today and tomorrow is on the California political scene. Both the Ford and Reagan camps seem to agree on one point, that Reagan is ahead right now. But the Ford organization is convinced that Reagan's support is soft enough to make an upset possible. There are about 11,000 Ford volunteers in the state. There is a major telephone canvassing operation, and the president's cabinet is scheduled for extensive duty. The secretaries of Commerce, Agriculture, Housing, Treasury, and Defense will be in the state, as will Mrs. Ford and two of the president's sons. As one presidential political aide puts it, a Ford victory in Reagan's home state would assure the president of a first ballot victory at the convention. A Reagan victory, on the other hand, means a tough convention fight with a small number of uncommitted delegates, perhaps 150 to 200, able to throw the nomination either way. Phil Jones, CBS News, with the Ford campaign in California.
There is obvious agreement between the Ford and Reagan camps on the crucial importance of the state. Terry Drinkwater reports from the Reagan campaign.
For Reagan, California is the big prize, and he came home last night to work in his state beginning this week. A victory here is as important as Michigan was to President Ford. And at an airport press conference, Reagan was asked about his opponent's efforts in California.
They've mounted a major effort in several places. As a matter of fact, they pulled out all stops. And, of course, as an incumbent, he has a great many things going for him, including scads of surrogates, cabinet officers, government officials, and the designation of highways and things of that kind.
Today, Reagan and his strategists will make their final plans for the California campaign. To begin, there's a full schedule in Orange and the other conservative counties of Southern California. And already, Reagan's TV spots are being run and rerun again. Terry Drinkwater, CBS News, Los Angeles.
The Ford camp is trying to make certain that the president does not again fall behind in delegates after the votes come in tomorrow to maintain the psychological advantage regained over the weekend, mainly with the help of the commitment of most of Pennsylvania's delegates. The attention today will shift to Albany, New York, where that state's 154 delegates will meet and hear appeals to back Mr. Ford. Said a Swedish foreign ministry official, it is a process of two governments shaking hands, not kissing. The once decidedly chilly relations between Washington and Stockholm warmed a bit today as Secretary of State Kissinger met Sweden's Prime Minister Palme. Bernard Kalb reports from Stockholm.
The Kissinger-Palme get-together symbolized the burying of the hatchet between the United States and Sweden, a return to normalcy in relations following the sharp strain that had developed at the time of the 1972 Christmas bombings, when Palme denounced the B-52 blitz against Hanoi, and an angry Richard Nixon reacted by recalling the U.S. ambassador to this country. But things had since eased between Washington and Stockholm. Kissinger was his usual bantering self when he met Palme this morning before a crowd of reporters. When they asked him to shake hands once again with the Swedish Prime Minister, the secretary quipped, "If you don't watch yourself, I'll embrace him. That's what I do in the Middle East." Kissinger arrived here last night after a crowd officially estimated at 10,000 staged a promenade of a demonstration to protest his visit, as well as various developments in Chile and Greece. Kissinger, go to hell, read one of the placards, but observers found the crowd unangry, almost nostalgic, as though the marchers had gone back to their attics to find their old anti-war placards in what seemed like Sweden's last gasp against the policy the U.S. had once followed in Vietnam. Bernard Kalb, CBS News, Stockholm.
In Beirut, the Palestine Liberation Organization today joined the Lebanese leftists in rejecting the French offer of peacekeeping troops, and the fighting again escalated in the capital and the countryside. Police report 71 persons killed overnight. In Tokyo, right-wingers broke through police lines and smashed several windows of the Japanese parliament today, but failed to halt the ratification of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Japan, the only nation to suffer a nuclear attack, becoming the 96th nation to ratify. In Rome, there was a surprise today as Pope Paul installed new cardinals of the church. There were 20 on hand, not the 19 expected, the 20th being the Archbishop of Hanoi, whose identity was apparently withheld because of uncertainty that North Vietnam would let him make the trip. Shortly before noon today, if all goes as scheduled, commercial supersonic transport service to this country will be a fact. Nelson Benton will be on hand at Dulles Airport.
Two of the needle-nosed, stubby-wing Concords are due to land today at Washington's Dulles Airport, marking the beginning of supersonic transport service for the United States. Concorde's backers call it an aviation breakthrough. Opponents call it a breakdown of government efforts to protect the environment. Their criticism directed at its noise and air pollution, its high fuel consumption per passenger mile. Fuel consumption, in fact, will affect both the British and the French SSTs arriving today, each carrying less than a full passenger load because of fuel capacity constraints. British Airways SST is scheduled in first, Air France to follow within 3 minutes. Court suits to block Concorde at Dulles went as far as Chief Justice Berger, who refused to overturn the government's decision to allow 16 months of trial service. But litigation still unsettled has so far barred the SST from the most lucrative U.S. airport, Kennedy, at New York. Flights from Washington to London and Paris begin tomorrow. Nelson Benton, CBS News, Washington.
The long love affair between Pittsburgh and Big Steel may be cooling. Even as a court this week hears new pollution arguments involving a coke plant, there are hints U.S. Steel may take new operations off to Texas. Jim Kilpatrick reports.
Will United States Steel continue to expand in the Pittsburgh area, or will it build a proposed multi-billion dollar plant somewhere else? Simultaneous news conferences are scheduled today in Washington and Houston, Texas, suggesting the Big Steel Company will build someplace else. U.S. Steel operations in the Pittsburgh area have run into problems. For the past 4 years, U.S. Steel has fought in court strict pollution control standards. A $3 million fine is at stake, but the litigation could take years. In full-page newspaper advertisements, U.S. Steel has clearly warned Pittsburgh that the governmental and environmental climate must change if U.S. Steel expands or even continues to operate some of its Pittsburgh facilities. Environmental groups call the advertisements community blackmail. Governmental officials are not that strong, but do say the advertisements are ill-timed. Jim Kilpatrick, CBS News, Pittsburgh.
The pollution dispute going back to the courts this week involves a coke plant at Clairton. Chairman Wayne Hayes of the House Administration Committee has canceled a trip to London today to pick up the Magna Carta to stay in Washington to fight charges leveled by a $14,000-a-year committee clerk. Bernard Shaw has more.
Elizabeth Ray says she won't be reporting for work this morning. In her words, "I have no desire to go back there." Her boss's office has said she's fired. Along with denying the charge that the blue-eyed North Carolina blonde was his mistress on call whenever he needed her, Chairman Wayne Hayes has delayed a London bicentennial trip to confer with lawyers about possible libel action against the Washington Post for printing the story, which he calls malicious. Ms. Ray has given her lawyer a handwritten affidavit spelling out details about the alleged affair to back up her claims.
As long as I'm around, you know, I can prove that it's true. I can prove it.
Beyond a doubt.
As long as I'm around, it can be proven that I'm telling the truth.
Hayes was asked, what will this do to your political career?
Well, I think it depends on my credibility versus hers. And I hope that my credibility will prevail.
Hayes said he regrets trying to help Ms. Ray, whom he called sick, and, quote, a pretty fair actress. Bernard Shaw, CBS News, Washington.
New government documents disclosed this morning show the Secret Service spied on a young socialist convention in 1972, agents photographing and tape recording the speakers.